Mud Podcast presents.
Greetings. Welcome to Talking Trash, our plastic catastrophe, where we talk your trash, my trash, our trash, and how all that plastic trash is trashing our planet and all its living things. I'm your host, Lois Cordova. So before I delve deeper into plastic industry deceptions, then I'll take a look at the as yet unknown and unquantified consequences on human and environmental health of wildfires burning in populated areas. I'd like to remind listeners that about 500 million tons of plastic are produced every year, and more than double the amount than 2 decades ago. And much of that turns up in our waterways and, you know, oceans, river banks, and scientists have sounded the alarm on microplastics in the environment and in us, as well as the dangers of all the thousands of chemicals in plastic that can leach into our food and our water and our shared biosphere and its many ecosystems. The production of plastics, of course, made from fossil fuels is expected to double or triple by 2050. And could use up to 31% of the remaining global carbon budget for limiting global warming to 1.5°C. So as the environmental toll from plastic pollution has grown, so has scrutiny of the plastic industry messaging. We talked about the September filing by the Attorney General of California, who he's suing ExxonMobil, alleging fossil fuels giant carried out what he said was a decades-long campaign of deception, that overhyped the promise of recycling, and that spawned the plastic pollution crisis. And on that front, the oil giant ExxonMobil has filed their own suit earlier this month, saying that the California Attorney General and environmental groups defamed ExxonMobil's integrity and reputation by claiming in lawsuits that, among other things, Exxon's advanced recycling technology doesn't work. While Exxon claims that advanced or chemical recycling of plastic works, remember that three of the nation's 11 advanced recycling facilities closed just in 2024, including one that went bankrupt. ExxonMobil calls the suit a conspiracy and a smear campaign. They're asking a federal court in Texas to make the plaintiffs retract their statements and pay unspecified damages. Thanks to a listener for that article that was in Floodlight about that suit development. So there's a lawsuit that was filed by the state of New York against PepsiCo, which they alleged that the company's communications had long obscured the environmental and health risks posed by single-use plastics. Well, that suit was dismissed, I think it was in November, by a New York judge. So just remember, recycling is an industry lie fostered to make you, the public, feel good about using plastic. There's no safe way to dispose of plastic. So this evening I'm going to discuss primarily some of the insidious, deceptive strategies the plastic industry has been using just lately to push its message that using plastic is clean and ecologically sound. The New York Times ran an article last month, and thank you to the listener that brought this article to my attention. The New York Times article details many of the strategies used to push a pro-plastic attitude or view among the general public by a plastic group formed just for the purpose of pushing a positive plastic message. It's frankly maddening, the almost subliminal cell going on, and it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. The big player in the Times article is the National Association for PET Container Resources, or NEPCOR, and that's what I'm going to call them through the rest of this discussion. The group NEPCOR, they represent 70 petrochemicals, plastics, and recycling companies, including INEOS, and that's a conglomerate that acquired BP's petrochemical business just in 2020. There's also a major supplier of plastic bottles to Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and Keurig Dr. Pepper. There is a maker of the distinctive red Solo cups, popular everywhere, and Eastman Chemical Company. They make polymers and films and plastics, including recycled plastics. Anyway, it represents a lot of big players. So the group's executive director, named Laura Stewart, she said in a statement that PET plastic played, quote, a critical role in our lives, from supporting healthy hydration to enabling life-saving medical devices to disaster recovery and relief efforts, end quote. She says the goal is to ensure every PET bottle is recycled, keeping this valuable material in circulation and out of the environment. Oh, by the way, the same week that the report on all of this came out is the same week that they were having the plastic treaty talks in Busan, South Korea. You'll remember those came to a peter out a lot because there were so many industry lobbyists at the plastic treaty negotiations, and there was just so many objections to any limits on plastic productions. So those have stalled, and they were held over for another session. So it was that same week that the Times ran this article. And the article is titled "Inside the Plastic Industry's Battle to Win Over Hearts and Minds About Documents Leaked from an Industry Group Showing How Plastic Companies Are Pushing Back Against a, quote, tide of anti-plastic sentiment," end quote. The article showcases parts of more than 400 pages of internal memos, presentations, other industry communications that were obtained by FieldNotes, which is a watchdog group that focuses on oil and gas industry. And it was reviewed by the New York Times for this article. And among the documents, et cetera, was details about a campaign on social media. My own relationship with various social media is pretty minimal, but some people, and actually quite a few people globally, worldwide, participate in all kinds of social media, well, like all the time. So part of the NAPCOR campaign was targeted social media messaging. And the New York Times article noted, for instance, the Stadler family, who are what are called influencers, people that post with large social media followings, meaning that means their messaging, what they say, spreads far and wide and rapidly. Now, the Stadlers, according to the article, own two Sassy Chihuahuas, Maddie and Remy, and they have more than 7 million followers on TikTok and Instagram. The Stadlers are amongst six social media influencers contracted by NAPCOR to post PET plastic messaging on their accounts. According to the New York Times, in May, Serena Sadler said, "Today we're going to the park to have a little picnic. Keeping the dogs hydrated is so important, so I packed plenty of water. I always opt for PET plastics because they're 100% recyclable." The Times notes that she failed to mention that the actual recycling rate is much, much lower. The six influencers, it looked like they're a pretty varied array of people. There's an RV traveler, there's a pharmacist who's turned into an entrepreneur, There's an account that promotes financial literacy through trivia games. And I guess none of them wanted to talk to the Times for the article. Their post all notes are sponsored by Positively PET. However, none of the Positively PET social media landing pages mention NAPCOR. There's apparently a separate page that does carry NAPCOR's logo, however, but that's not the one in social media takes you to. So the latest round of the influencer campaign ran last May to July, just this last summer, and according to internal memos, quote, surpassed our expectations, end quote. That was written by Lindsay Nichols, who's the communications director, and that was in a memo sent to all the members. The social media posts made 12.2 million impressions, more than doubling expectations. And a survey conducted after the campaign showed it had led to a significant increase of positive public perceptions towards the plastic industry. Over on Facebook, NAPCOR's lack of disclosure landed its ads in trouble. Apparently, between 2020 and 2022, nine ads appeared on Facebook under the Positively PET campaign, and all nine were removed for violating the platform's advertising rules, which require organizations that put ads on there about social issues or politics to include a paid-for-by disclaimer. The association enlisted the public relations firm that had said that voices are calling for safe, environmentally conscious packaging alternatives are growing louder, and that ad firm's solution was the social media campaign centered around Positively PET. That's the slogan. So they also did some newsjacking, and they did that with the in the Summer Olympics, where there was a public debate over the ban on single-use plastics, bottles, cups, all of that at the Olympics. And they used that as an opportunity to newsjack. They inserted industry messaging into trending conversations. They would post messages on social media sites using hashtags like hashtag Olympics that would say PET plastic is not single use, and recycling, not banning, is the best way to eliminate plastic waste. Wait, there's more. They say, the article says NAPCOR partnered with other plastic industry associations to work with the actor Dennis Quaid on an episode for his Viewpoint with Dennis Quaid TV series. Never heard of it personally. In a style reminiscent of PBS educational programming, the show does run on PBS stations, according to a quick internet search that I did, but it's not otherwise associated with PBS. The show hails PET bottles as, quote, arguably one of mankind's greatest inventions, end quote. It was exclusively industry executives, with one director of the School of Packaging. And the school has close links with the plastic industry and had received a transformative gift of 10.8 million from a plastic packaging company, according to this article. So I've not experienced any of these marketing ploys since I'm not active on social media, and frankly, I didn't closely follow the Olympics on social media again, and I don't watch TV. So I'd love to hear from listeners during the call-in period. We'll open the lines at about 7:30 as usual. If any of you have encountered any of these or other pro-plastic advertising or ads or whatnot, influencers or shows, I would like to hear about that, and I hope you will share it with our listeners. So now, we're going to move on to wildfires. things, everything, everywhere. Please note that I am wildly waving my arms in the air, indicating everything. Everything is changing so fast. The consequences of the last few decades of wanton fossil fuel burning and petrochemical invention and the distribution in all of its guises, from clothing to vehicle parts to packaging to construction products, it has our lives just saturated in these injurious chemicals. So what's worse is just now coming onto the radar of studiers of environments, disasters, and the impacts those have on humans is that wildfires aren't just burning in our surrounding forests anymore. Now these conflagrations are burning our homes, recently by the thousands. Modern construction uses a lot of plastic, from window frames to plumbing to siding. We live essentially in plastic cities, and what's inside our homes, the furniture, drapes, carpets, and other accoutrements, plastic, plastic, plastic. So I found quite a few articles on the topic of the toxics introduced into the environment through the recent wildfires experienced in many communities throughout the Los Angeles area just a few weeks ago now. So USA Today noted that the fires will, quote, leave Los Angeles with an unprecedented environmental catastrophe that will linger for years, experts say, from the toxic ash settling in backyards and playgrounds to asthma attacks, drinking water contamination, and even an increased risk of dementia, which studies have tied to wildfire particulate exposure, end quote. So even now, human swimmers and surfers are already being told to remain out of the water, and the toxins will likely have long-term impacts on the water quality and the marine life, including on the dolphins. The next time it rains, miles of those canyons and those hillsides that have been charred by the wildfires, and all of the houses and cars that were on them, all of the businesses, all of that debris will go rushing down the ravines, through the drainage, into the Pacific Ocean. The debris from 12,000 burned houses and businesses is so toxic that homeowners could be banned from cleaning up their own property, based on how authorities have handled similar but smaller fires. Homeowners may be required to depend on really specially certified workers. One expert told USA Today that residents should start thinking about their neighborhoods in terms of the dangerous burn pits once used by the military in Iraq and Afghanistan to dispose of waste. Another said residents should avoid even touching the remains of their homes. Katie Arrington, she's a disaster recovery expert who's been helping to manage the aftermath of the Denver 2021 wildfires that destroyed just about 1,000 homes, said, quote, residents should not go home and sift through the debris. It is highly toxic debris. It's the mixing of all the materials together, along with it burning. It's not just your house, but your neighbor's houses, your car in the driveway, end quote. She works for Boulder County's Recovery and Resiliency Division. She said just removing the debris from homes destroyed in the 2021 fire took 6 months and required the expertise of contractors licensed to handle the waste. In most cases, they had to remove at least 3 inches of dirt from people's yards in order to reduce the ash and toxin contamination to acceptable levels. That work averaged $40,000 to $60,000 per house, by the way. So scientists have a pretty good handle on the problems posed by wildfire smoke to people that comes from burning vegetation. There is really relatively little research complete on the effects of large-scale urban fires because, we're just now really beginning to have them. And our houses are increasingly made of plastic various petrochemicals. A study of Montanans exposed to wildfire smoke for 6 weeks in 2017 found their lung function was impaired for at least 2 years following that exposure. And that was just smoke from burning trees, not houses or cars or grocery stores or gas stations. In general, this is more similar to burn pit exposures. Again, another person said it. It's just a pile of garbage that's being burned. And when the fire rips through houses and cars and trees, it's going to be putting out more and very toxic chemicals. You add in heavy metals, things like lead, all of your building materials, foams and plastics, carpets and asphalt. That was David Michaels. He's the former head of federal workplace safety regulating at OSHA. And he said that authorities face tough decisions in the coming days, weeks, months. Scientists know the debris is toxic, and so is the ash coating the homes, the playgrounds, the everything that remains standing. But he said residents need to go home soon. He said, quote, "This ash that's contaminated with huge numbers of toxic chemicals being deposited all over Los Angeles, including playgrounds and backyards, and children's bodies are at a much greater risk," end quote. He said the United States needs to have a reckoning, both about the risks and the causes of these urban firestorms. Employers, he said, must accept that workers cannot be forced back to their jobs while such high health risks remain. And society needs to come to terms with the reality that climate change is making such fires worse. He continued, quote, "We haven't recognized this as a national problem in the United States yet, and we need to. Many of our nation's residents are having their lives disrupted and impacted by the climate crisis, and we have a responsibility to take care of them. The impacts, especially on children, will be very great," end quote. Now, considering the new administration, I'm not personally counting on anything meaningful changing soon, so far as recognition of the hazards nor any way to mitigate them. So, there was a Newsweek article, and this woman, Nina Griffey, she's the CEO of Cambridge Mass Company. She told Newsweek that the risk level is, quote, "completely unknown." The toxins are emanating not only from the burning trees and brush, but also houses and other buildings whose composition includes man-made materials like plastics and other synthetics. Griffey's told Newsweek, quote, "The sheer amount of buildings and man-made materials is a completely unknown level of risk in terms of toxicity and what goes into the air. It's obviously not natural, but there's no true data on what is in the air," Griffey said. It's anyone's guess, but it would take a lot to look at. It's polyester sofas. It's a lot of things. At the moment, it's a little bit of a soup. An article in Medium said Los Angeles fires pose a unique danger due to the prevalence of plastics in modern homes, which release hazardous chemicals when burned. Southern California skies fill with toxic smoke and mix intensified by the widespread use of plastics and petrochemical materials. Modern homes are filled with plastic materials. Common items like couches often feature polyester fabric and polyurethane foam, which releases toxic hydrogen cyanide gas when burned. Furniture frames might be solid wood or engineered wood, held together with polymer-based glues, vinyl flooring, foam insulation, laminate countertops, synthetic textiles. Those all dominate interiors, while even house paints now typically consists of pigments suspended in basically liquid plastic. The Medium article went on to say, quote, "Wildfire smoke poses serious health risks, causing thousands of premature deaths annually and contributing to heart and lung problems, low birth weight, and cognitive decline. Burning trees release harmful gases like carbon monoxide, CO2, and PM2.5 particles that penetrate deep into the lungs and bloodstream. When homes burn, the hazards multiply, releasing hydrogen cyanide, hydrochloric acid, dioxins, and volatile organic compounds. When you're burning a home or an entire neighborhood, we don't have a handle on the breadth of the VOCs being emitted, says atmospheric chemist Nadine Berdad-Dechind. Those gases could react in the atmosphere to form even more toxins. While N95 masks block PM2.5, only gas masks protect against the harmful gases. End quote. The Medium article recalled the 2022, I'm sorry, 2020 Fire Safety Research Institute experiment where fire was set to two identical living rooms, one furnished with synthetic materials and the other with natural ones. I remember watching this and it was really striking. The synthetic room, featuring a polyester couch, engineered wood table, and synthetic carpet, erupted into full room flashover in less than 5 minutes, producing thick toxic smoke. By contrast, the natural material room with cotton cushions and hardwood furniture took over 30 minutes to reach flashover and generated significantly less smoke. The medium noted this disparity highlights why the number of fire fatalities have risen, even as the overall number of home fires have declined since 1980. Now, after the fact, studies, of course, will now be done about what has been released into the air and soil and water and into the bodies of all the living things in the vicinity, near and maybe not so near. We will learn as time goes on what some long-term consequences of breathing the toxic smoke will turn out to be. As I begin to see the pictures of the disaster emerge, videos, a block after block of burned homes and businesses, I couldn't help but think, and I bet some of you did too, of Gaza and what the people there have been exposed to for over a year now, and that they will continue to be exposed to with no cautions to the health risks posed by the toxic rubble that is there. Hey, then you add in the toxics of the weapons being used.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support People Powered Radio at kmud.org.
You are listening to Talking Trash, our plastic catastrophe on KMUD, Redwood Community Radio, Garverville, Redwood. I'm your host, Lois Cordova. It's time to open the phone lines. I'd love to hear if any of you have encountered any of that pro-plastic advertising in the ads, or if you've seen any of the influencers. Like I said, I don't really social media, so I've skimmed and scanned enough to know what they're talking about. I just haven't seen that stuff myself. And wow, the stuff those fires have released into the air, and as soon as it's rained, it'll go into the sea, and just the contamination of everything there and the people that are living there. So give us a call. I'd love to hear any of your thoughts on that. Have you read other information about the massive wildfires that are now consuming our towns too? I'm sure there was just so much information. I felt like it barely brushed the surface. And anyway, so I'll just go ahead and fill in something that I didn't get to. I didn't get to as fully as I wanted to. Democrats, and this is about the Biden administration. And they argued just at the end of the administration there that there's no right to a healthy environment. And they argued that to the World Court just this last December. So I didn't get a chance to go into the U.S. submission to the International Court of Justice in the oral hearings. I talked about it a little bit, and it's the advisory opinion. Oh, we have a phone call. Hi, welcome to Talking Trash. You are on the air.
With a lot of trash. Sorry, that was supposed to be a joke. You go to the grocery store, the supermarket, wherever, and you buy vegetables in the produce department, and they have these bags to put your vegetables in, plastic bags.
You don't have to use those. I just put them loose in my cart.
Yeah, I know. Most of them I do, too, but maybe tomatoes or something I might want to put in a bag. But at any rate, Grocery Outlet has some kind of new bag. And I read on this bag, it says, this bag is compostable. And then over here I read, commercially compostable only. Facilities may not exist in your area. Certification, da-da-da-da, some number.
Right.
And insignia. I mean, what is this? It feels like some thinner plastic. Plastic's not compostable.
That's been going on for actually quite a while. And yeah, they are not. They're only industrially compostable. And it's a scam pretty much used to make the stores use these bags instead of the plastic bags. So they're not recyclable. They are not compostable. And so they're trash. And they just become microplastic. Yep, yep, yep.
What is BPI?
I'm sorry?
BPI. It has some like icon or something rather, and underneath it, there's a B. B is in boy, P is in plastic, I is in integrated.
I don't know. I'm gonna have to look that up. I'm gonna have to have somebody fetch me one of those bags that goes to the grocery outlet.
Yeah, well, I think this is some kind of scam. It feels like
it absolutely is. There's such a long feel good about using plastic list.
It just feels like some kind of thinner plastic than the old produce bags they had.
That's pretty much what it is. There's probably some bioplastic in it to some, there's lots of different configurations of this quote compostable, industrially compostable plastic. I think there's like only one facility that did that in California. I don't know now if they still exist. There was one back when I first looked into this stuff like maybe 6 or 8 years ago. It's been a while. And
well,
since
it's kind of misleading, if you don't read the whole bag, I mean, everything that's printed on the bag, you might think you could compost it in your garden compost.
Yeah, well, I first encountered it when vendors at fests and other events were trying to, move away from using plastic, and they brought it's actually some of them that brought this compostable plastic scam to my attention. They said it says compostable and da da da, but then it says out here on the box in real tiny print, industrial only. Like we're
right.
That's
printed on this bag with some BPI, whatever. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
It might be the manufacturer, or it might be some indication for the industrial composting facility should the bag ever actually end up at one. I really don't know.
There's a certification number for the commercially compostable only. All right, Lois, I just, you know, I...
Yeah,
They change their bags at Grocery Outlet about, I don't know, two weeks to a month ago. And I don't know. To me, this stuff just feels like some kind of thin plastic.
It is. Don't use them. Avoid them.
Right. Avoid all plastic.
Thanks for calling and bringing that up again. I'd actually kind of forgotten about that. We haven't talked about that particular one in a while. It's one of those things, I guess, that like once we talk about on the show and it becomes common knowledge among my small circle, I forget that not everybody has been listening to us all along and might remember that conversation from a few years ago. Anyway, so since we're back at waiting for a moment because no one is calling, I'm going to go back to this. I won't say it's a moot point. What it is, it shows us that even this Biden administration that was supposedly, ostensibly, public-facingly climate-friendly wasn't really. So the United Nations, you know, they held the meetings and they all submitted their opinions. And that's where the ICJ is going to be determining financial liability for countries and their contributions. Oh, there's another call.
Hey, you know, planet warming is happening and, you know, all the other stuff. So how do we can only just do what we do. Just go.
We can only do what we can. Keep getting our, you know, fight back at every opportunity. You know, there's the vote with your dollar, which isn't much, but the more people that we can help to understand why that does help if enough of us do it. I realize that doesn't feel like much. It one person doing that isn't much, but thousands and thousands of us it is.
Yeah, a whole bunch of people going, okay.
Engage with your politicians.
What's up next, right?
Engage with your representatives.
You know, the thing is, I know
I know they stonewall us. They don't respond. But, you know, it's
aware of that. I'm aware of that.
You can do.
I am. I mean, what? I grew up, you know, like California. Born in Los Angeles. And
we are so lucky that we've got the slight protection of living in California that has an attorney general that does things like sue ExxonMobil. It's pretty amazing the things that we are seeing today. And it's complicated by the climate change that we as in the whole society have created. It's complicated by the plastic petrochemical pollution.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely everything we're experiencing anyway is complicated by those things. And so, like, even the experience of this oncoming presidency is that is going to be tempered by climate change, by various, you know, things in the plastics and fossil fuel industry. It's just interesting. I don't know. It's one of those. I used to really like disaster movies. I'm going to confess here. I used to really like disaster movies, and I should be in seventh heaven because all I got to do is read the news today. It is like one big, long, evolving, complicated, twisty, churny, full of mystery and intrigue.
Isn't that funny? It really is. I mean, I'm just, I'm not I'm not saying funny, but I'm, you know, I want to hear what you say, and I'm going like, okay, because some people, and I've thought about it, some people have just like, okay, done with it. But, I mean, I was born in Los Angeles
That's just the thing, though, hon, is that even going far away, we're not going to be able to, like, to
get away with it. It's always here.
Quote, no place that's safe. That climate change is going to get you wherever and in some manner or another. Pollution is going to get you in some different ways in different places.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's
we're on the same page. We're on the same page. We're talking about the same stuff.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's partly why I've got this show, is that I wanted to share what I was learning. And I had no idea where this little learning journey was going to take me, or that I'd be still hauling everybody along with me all this time later.
Yeah, the thing is,
or that there would be this many twists and turns to it, or that it was this
deep. Your learning experiences that brought you to right where what you are doing right now.
And I'm and I get to take you all along with me for an hour every week, or every month. The patch.
Right.
A garbage patch, a Great Pacific garbage patch, of which actually there's 5 different gyres, and I've heard there might be as many as 8. And it's not really a patch, like a solid land type of
thing. Yeah, I kind of know that. Yeah.
It's like soup. It's like a muddy plastic soup.
It's because of the ocean currents. It's
right,
not just one big patch.
And there's all kinds of, like, marine life that is attaching to various things. And there's all these things that have, like, drifted from their host places on the plastic that are all getting together out there on these gyres. So it's got its
cold. Actually, there are new bunches of, you know, stuff, animals and stuff.
It's a whole unique
animal cases that are actually changing how to live, because they're living on that plastic island.
Yeah, it's a really unique ecosystem, according to scientists that are studying it.
Yeah, I read Darwin and I pay attention to this stuff, and I'm going, oh yeah.
They call it the plastosphere. They even named it that.
There are probably animals running around there going, all right, here, this is home, you know.
Oh, there are. There's all kinds of critters that are.
Oh, yeah. We're talking the same language. Oh, your name? I forget your name.
Lois. Like Lois Lane, like Superman's girlfriend.
No, my name is Stephen. What's your name?
Lois.
Lois?
Lois.
Mine's Stephen, so nice talking. And
well, it's been really nice talking with you, Stephen.
My pleasure. All right, take care. Bye.
Thanks for the call. Is there anyone else out there with thoughts on plastic pollution? And I'm gonna go on with this little bit that I didn't get to last show, and I might not get to finish this show. And it's mostly, I just want to read a written response. So there was, at the end of the presentations to the court, the judges asked some written questions of all the responders and asked them to respond in writing. And just the first one just kind of knocked my socks off. So this is where we stand with the ICJ about responsibility in our responsibility in harming the earth and other people that live on it. The judges asked, quote, some participants have argued during the written and oral stages of the proceedings that there exists the right to a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment in international law. Could you please develop what is, in your view, the legal content of this right and its relation with the other human rights which you consider relevant for this advisory opinion. The U.S. responded, quote, and this is not long, quote, no treaty of global application provides for a right to a healthy environment, nor is such a right supported by the extension and virtually uniform state practice and opinion in opinio juris necessary to establish a rule of customary international law. While select regional treaties, domestic laws, and non-binding sources reflect a growing appreciation by the international community of the importance of a healthy environment to the enjoyment of human rights, these sources are not sufficient evidence of the crystallization of a new rule of customary international law. Efforts to develop or define a new human right to a healthy environment must comport with the established rules for the creation of international law. The United States remains open to participating in a transparent process in which states have an opportunity to provide input on the scope and content of such a right and to indicate their consent to be bound. End quote. So the United States officially does not believe that humans have a right to a healthy environment. It's very, very interesting looking around at the various United States stances that one wouldn't necessarily know if you didn't poke around and read the responses and policies as they're submitted to courts. It's not the way that our politicians and representatives present themselves to us. They give us these speeches saying, you know, that just kind of big words and vague ideas. But when it comes down to really what our policies are, there are things like nobody has a right to a healthy environment. Nobody. You know, we're open to listening to how people might consent to be bound to, you know, like there, it's legalese that basically says we don't matter. Humans don't matter. Only the grand dollar matters, which is evident in the topic of this show, plastic, because we would not be being polluted by it in our bodies, in our environments, in our food, in our air, in our water, in our soil, and everything, everywhere, if it weren't for people going after the almighty dollar. We have a caller. Hi, you are on the air.
Hi, I heard on the news last year, I think it was, the University of Washington was working on biodegradable, organic type plastic material to take over, that wouldn't turn into the toxins that are the current plastics doing.
There's actually a lot of work being done on a lot of alternatives. Some look really hopeful. The problem keeps being bringing it up to scale. The other is just the plastic industry saying, you know, like pretty much like pushing out the any competition and any suggestion that plastic might not be the be-all, end-all.
And then they're taking all those tons of fishing nets from Hawaii and transporting them to the Midwest somewhere to turn them into lumber. Oh, I'm not laughing. That's not funny. Huh? But
no,
at least it's not floating in the ocean.
It's pretty phenomenal, the lengths that are being gone by the plastic industry to continue to find consent to continue to produce the plastic. At least they're not in the ocean, but then they're going to turn into our decks or our siding or other things. And then they will be, you know, then there's the fires or the floods or the whatever.
They're learning that from Los Angeles. They're all just going up in smoke and causing worse problems. Well, just as bad. Well, I guess that's the thing to keep an eye on is what they're doing for the organic type plastic they're trying to design now. So I guess
we do once in a while I'll feature something that's looking pretty promising, but then I'll end up not hearing about it again.
Well, we should keep an eye on that stuff and like see how far they've gotten and find out who's working on it, and maybe some of your news people can give them a call or something.
then there's also that we've just got to change our habits.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah,
like paper bags, but then there's paper.
Well, that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing we got to work on, is just not having this disposable society and that we can use things once and throw them away. We got to take a little more responsibility for our own actions. And well, I've got another caller. I'd like to.
Thank you. Thank you.
Get them in. Thank you. Hi, you are on the air with Talking Trash.
Well, hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to bring up what I learned a couple years ago, that cigarette butts are a form of plastic that is called cellulose acetate.
Oh, yeah.
And I did an experiment and had found that Pleurotus austriatus mushroom mycelium will break it down. I did a 5-gallon bucket full of cigarette butts and allowed it to grow for 4 months. Couldn't find a trace of it.
Just that is pretty awesome.
Practical solutions to big problems that you can't do anything about, you know.
There, I am seeing, I guess, the most optimistic studies I've seen coming out of various fungi. Digesting.
I think microbiology could be the answer.
So there is some hope there. There definitely is, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, so that we're not kind of closing out the show on a really, really sad, it's all hopeless and we're doomed note. There's always
the guy who mapped the human genome. He has been out probing the seas and getting a handle on how much microplastic is really out there, and finding all these microbes that have adapted to the plastic that's there. The only problem is when they break that plastic down, they create other compounds, just like you were saying earlier with when the house is burned, it reacts with the atmosphere, and then you got new problems.
it is being studied with by people with much more knowledge than either you or I hold. And I'm loving reading those reports as they are coming out. And as I said, that is one thing that's giving me some hope, at least for the recycling side of it. You know, it won't be recycling, but at least disposal. Because now what do we do with it? We keep it out of our waterways, but then we don't have anything to do with it. We can collect it out of the environment in the wild, but then what? It just goes to our landfills.
No such thing as away, right?
No such place as away, right. So it's time to close this out here and give the airwaves back to K-Mud. And I would like to thank you very much for calling. And I would like to thank all the rest of the callers and all of the listeners. You're why I do this. And I appreciate your time and your attention. Remember, it's people powered. And that means also from donations by listeners like you. You can donate by going to kmud.org. And there is a donate button in the corner at the top of the page.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.